5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating.
Welcome to AnnaZone 23, where we look at old anime, especially movies and OVAs. These are the films and projects that help shape the anime landscape as we know it today. We want to look at them in their own era and how they were the inspiration for many of the shows and franchises that are popular today. Some have become legends, while others have been deservedly forgotten. All of them, you should remind yourself, someone had to draw that.
Thanks, Major Tom.
Welcome to AnnaZone 23, and on today's episode, we are talking about Dirty Pair, kind of the origin of the Crazy Cop Duo show. Drew, would you like to give a little more information in this, since you are joining me again this week, just the two of us? We're going to be going into this one, and actually, you've got some connections to this series, if I remember correctly.
Yes, remember how I said that everybody has their first series and you can't ever say too much bad stuff about somebody's first series? They just don't care. They won't listen anyway. Well, this is pretty near my first anime series, and it's the first one that I ever subtitled back in the day when I was a fan subtitler. The movie specifically. So I am more than a little bit familiar with this show. That's Lovely Angels, by the way, Rick. You really shouldn't be throwing around the word. They might hear you. They might get upset. Dirty Pair is another creation of Haruka Takachiyo, the same man, as we said, who created Crusher Joe and whose company did most of the mecha designs for Macross, amongst other shows. Dirty Pair had originally came about when he was escorting American sci-fi author Bertram Chandler around Japan, and he took him to Japanese women's pro wrestling.
Slight correction on that, Drew. Bertram Chandler is a British-Australian.
British-Australian. I probably got the
once got the again, A wrong.
My nationalities. Oh, well. And so this is Japanese women's pro wrestling in its heyday in the mid to late 70s. As we said, the two biggest tag teams at that period were the Crush Gals, or the Crushers, which did the original line as Asuka, and probably had something to do with it naming Crusher Joe. And then the other one, the League Tag Team Champions, were the Beauty Pair. Well, apparently Takachiyo or Chandler made some smartest remark about a couple of his assistants who were along for the ride being the Dirty Pair, as opposed to the Beauty Pair that were up in the ring. And Takachiyo thought about that, spun it around his head, and dashed off another bit of pulp sci-fi about a pair of not quite cops, but they work for a private entity called the World's Works Welfare Association. Yes, WWWA. Sounds very, in fact, shares a name with an old Japanese wrestling group.
Yeah, it shares the name for the I believe it was called It was part of All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling, but it was for the, they give their belts. This is something that Japan does that the American promotions don't do. The name on the belt doesn't match the name for the promotion. So, for example, New Japan Pro Wrestling, all of their belts are the IWGP Championship of whatever, like heavyweight, junior heavyweight, tag team, with AJWP, All Japan Pro Women's Pro Wrestling. It was the World Women's Wrestling Association. It's kind of like the old, it's Japan held on to the old way of wrestling where you had sort of like an organization that oversaw all the individual promotions. So the champions would move from like one place to the other. And that's your wrestling lesson for the day.
And this was created roughly 78 was the first Dirty Pair story. It did take quite a fair amount of time for them to get animated because, again, things weren't being created at that rapid a speed. First case of animated Lovely Angels that we have is a student film that's been floating around the internet the last years. We don't know which students it was that did it. It's not terribly well animated. We know it's very early because it uses Yaz's, because Yaz did the original character designs on the girls. character designs with the silver silver costumes with the knee-high boots and everything else, and Kay's haircut is a little more subdued than the other ones, and the sound has got real issues. But it is interesting, and I believe that some of the people who worked on some of the later versions had seen it, because certain areas are kind of familiar. But their original official debut was on the drive-in screen during the Crusher Joe movie, which we talked about a few months ago. And that went over pretty big, and with the 80s going pretty strong, there was discussion about making a show. At that point, Tsukasa Dokite was the man who was responsible for turning Yaz's original designs into something a little bit more animatable, at which point their costumes went from silver to either white or blue, K's, and yellow with red trim, Yuri's, which is pretty much where they've stayed, although there have been white costumes as well, and occasional bouts with possibly being silver. And that led to the Dirty Pair TV series, which was a definite cult hit. It was not pulling in a whole lot of heavy ratings, but it definitely had a niche following. And only 24 episodes were actually broadcast. The last two episodes were pulled off the broadcast and released direct to video, because the show did much better on video than it ever did broadcast on TV. It was successful enough that there was an OVA, then a movie, then another OVA released. That would be A Pharaoh in Olympia, the Dirty Pair movie, which everybody, and including me, refers to as Project Aiden, and the 005 Conspiracy, which was the last of the mainline Dirty Pair shows. In between, there was also a 10-volume OVA that was basically more TV episodes. Slightly different character designs, better animation budget, but cheaper production.
Yeah, and they have that listed as Dirty Pair 2 here on Wikipedia. The thing to note is that all these were animated by Sunrise, all the major releases.
They're all Sunrise. They all have that Sunrise tech look. Again, as we said, Crusher Joe also has it, and Cowboy Bebop has it. There are a lot of secondary bits of technology in Cowboy Bebop that look very familiar because, well, they're originally in Dirty Pair. And Faye Valentine's costume looks very familiar because, well, it's pretty much Yuri's.
Yeah.
With a few modifications. But it's very similar. It doesn't cover much more of her body than Yuri's costume ever did. And so the Dirty Pair had a run from about 85, 86 to about 90, 91 for all of that to come out. And about 2-3 years later, there was a relaunch of a younger version of them. Yes, even Japan does kids' versions, which was called Dirty Pair Flash. In the original shows, they're canonically 19. In Flash, they're 17. Flash owes an awful lot to, at that time, very popular Sailor Moon. We have instant transformation costumes, somewhat of a lighter touch, and character designs that just scream 90. They're very off. On the other hand, we have a lot of actual Takachiho stories being adapted. A few of the OVAs are adapted from Takachiho stories, but not very many. So there is that. Flash is not as bad as you think it is at first, but it does have a few issues. And it went for about, I think, 13 episodes or so, and then it faded out. But
it's kind of weird because Dirty Pair Flash is listed actually as, it looks like it got 16 across 16. Three it's different releases. Mission 1, Mission 2, releases. Mission 3. Yeah.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3. That's why it's hard to keep track of, because there's three distinct releases for Dirty Pair Flash. It was not unpopular.
Mission 1 in 94, and then Mission 2 and 3 were both in 95. Well, Mission 3 was December 95 to April 96.
Yeah, and the first one is basically an attempt to do an origin story. It's okay. The second one is mostly a long-term one when they're in a virtual world. Something close to Disneyland, which is actually somewhat based, I believe, on one of Takachiho's stories and has some fun moments in it. And then the third one is mostly a series of one-offs where they get to do interesting things and make comments on the characters. And that was the end of Dirty Pair at that point. Since then, there's been no more original Dirty Pair Animation, although he has to continue to crank out the books on occasion.
Yeah, the last one came in December 2018. That'd been the ninth volume of Dirty Pair.
Continued to publish them all down the line. But Dirty Pair, as a cultural presence since the 80s, has quite a bit of cultural penetration in anime. More than, we'll get to it in a little bit, an awful lot of penetration in American sci-fi and general nerdy popular culture. And again, into TV tropes. As I said, they're the Lovely Angels. That's their real nickname. Dirty Pair is just what people call them because they have a tendency to cause massive collateral damage while solving their cases. It's never their fault. It's never their intention. But massive collateral damage sort of follows the Dirty Pair around. That's just how it is.
I was going to say, not their intention might be a little bit more accurate than necessarily not their fault.
Not their fault. They never lose.
Sometimes
their
they get a little overzealous.
Yes, but it's never culpably their fault. Still got their, they still have their licenses. So, but that's the general overview. To basically explain who are the Dirty Pair. The Dirty Pair are a 3WA investigator troubleshooter team of two girls, age 19, Kay and Yuri, and they are a very mismatched pair of girls. Kay, as Adam Warren, who did the American comic book adaptions, does, and he goes to the short form. It's real simple. Kay, bad girl. Yuri, good girl. It's a little more complicated than that, but there are two very opposite personalities that have been paired off. They argue constantly, make snide remarks about each other, are the best friends either of them ever had, and generally are just all kinds of fun. I would say, as I said, Kay is the bad girl, has bright red hair, usually in the anime, in a very poofy, spiked up hairstyle that is defies gravity, amongst other things. Kay also holds the record for butchest anime female for 10 years. She probably still holds the record for butchest anime female that answers as heterosexual. At some point, Sailor Uranus took her hairstyle and took the title from her.
I think there's probably a few that might have surpassed her since then, but we've also... I was going to say probably my wife's favorite character from Gate. I mean,
she's
she
up
does...
there, but she's quiet butch. Kay is loud butch.
Oh, come on. She beats the crap out of a crown prince with nothing but Kevlar hard-knuckle gloves.
This is true.
And then coldly shoots down a legion of Rugen soldiers.
Yeah, there's a lot of butchy characters, but Kay is the original butch female character in anime. No choice about it. For mid-80s,
definitely.
She is shockingly butch. Tends to literally wear the pants in the pair, is a mistress of disguise. Sometimes she even disguises herself as a woman. But Yuri is the good girl. You know, quiet, Yamato Nadeshiko, fainting flower sort. Except when she gets mad. One of the running gags of the story is that when Yuri gets mad, she's actually more violent than Kay is. It just takes her a lot longer to get angry.
I kind of noticed this when I was, we were watching Crusher Joe. What's her name from Crusher Joe?
Alfin
and Yuri kind of have similar personalities.
Yeah,
they're the girly girls, but piss them off, and oh dear God, watch out!
Yes, they're the sweetness and light, and oh, you just broke my nail. You are so fucking dead. Sort. Yeah. Whereas Kay is loud, rambunctious. Terrifies her dates, does all sorts of other nasty things, says exactly what's on her mind. There's a lovely bit in Flash because they're bodyguarding a hacker, and he's fallen in love with the girl at the flower shop, and they're trying to give advice to him, and Yuri's kind of jealous because he's paying attention to another woman that isn't her. It's not that she likes him so much, he's paying attention to another woman, and she's right there.
She's a little bit of a narcissist. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And she's like, well, you take her to a nice foreign film, and Kay says, in the dub. Ah, movies with subtitles are boring. Take her on the jet coaster. They have a bit of meta humor here and there. And that is what really carried, the chemistry between the two is what carried the TV show. Because the TV show is got several very good episodes, but it is notoriously also, if you ever learn to speak Japanese or understand it to any great degree, you quickly realize that especially the TV show, the writing, and especially the dialogue is mostly really doesn't hold up well at all. It's just, there's opportunities to put in more interesting things. And when you're watching it in Japanese, when you were watching it in raw Japanese, we probably came up with better dialogue than the original writers. Because the tone is there. The two actresses who play the characters have their chemistry down. But what they're saying just doesn't work half the time. Also, they missed the opportunity for a lot of really good jokes.
It's as you put it previous, as you've put it to me previously, it's George Lucas syndrome.
Yeah,
you could have chemistry, but chemistry don't mean squat if the writing is bad.
Well,
or it can only go so far.
Chemistry can save a lot of things. But and the other thing that was interesting when the Dirty Pair TV series came out on tape and Laserdisc originally, it did not come out chronologically. It came out in sets of two on tape, three on Laserdisc, and it came out in roughly the order of best episodes first. Because, the first one that came out had the Heartbeat of Clyrdos, which is the one that Kay's running around in her underwear the entire time, and there's a dead scientist trying to kill them. The one where they break into a casino and have to steal a chip, it's a poker chip. It has a chip in it. It's a chip with a chip. And it's basically a semi-Bond pasty. And then they have the episode where Yuri gets a letter from her old childhood friend who wants to get married and go off somewhere, but she has to break him out of prison first, and has the bit where it ends up that we find out just how much what Kay will do for Yuri because, you know, Yuri is her friend. Which is, she will set this thing up even if the 3WA won't authorize the mission, she'll pay for it out of their joint account. So, which leaves them bickering and bazookas at a whole bunch of helicopters as things fade out.
Now,
those are some of the best episodes. There are several other very strong ones in the TV series, but there's a lot of weak ones. Basically, if they're bodyguarding or kidnapping somebody, or they think they've kidnapped somebody, it's a pretty weak episode. The Fistful of Dollars / Yojimbo parody. One girl works for each side, it's a Wild West planet. That one's fun, but that one could have been written about six times better. But it works fairly well. It's fun. And there's one episode. As I said, Dirty Pair does not have a specific genre other than sci-fi. So most of the episodes tend to be not parodies, but pastiches of other action genres. Because they're going to be silly, so they're not really parodies. They're closer to pastiche. And one of the better episodes, although it's one of the poorest animated, is a straight-up remake of the Clint Eastwood movie, The Gauntlet. Except it only takes 30 minutes, and they blow up a much larger building than they did in the original.
And that's one of the things I kind of think would be a good thing to talk about, is really that the thing for Dirty Pair to go the most in detail into is Project Aiden, because that is, yeah, it's commonly revered to be not only bigger and louder than the TV series, but also better, like a lot better. And I can definitely see that from the little bit of the TV series I've seen. It's okay. Project Aiden I've watched now probably five or six times, thanks to you, and it hasn't really lost its luster yet.
Project Aiden is one of the best. Even for all the anime movies in the 80s, it's overall one of the best plotted ones around. It flows together nicely. It is very much, it has a bit of Dr. Frankenstein and Alien in it, but it is mostly a James Bond pastiche done. It was done contemporary with the very end of the Roger Moore era in James Bond. So the fairly silly James Bond era. So it's Kay and Yuri are sent to a planet that has basically the Cold War is going on between two different factions of mining companies, as in one of them has hammers and protractors and the other one has stars and stripes on their flag. It's not subtle, and because their mining equipment keeps being damaged by monsters, and they eventually track it down to a mad scientist who is trying to turn rock into monsters, more or less. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's about what you need to know. And It opens with a song called Sapphire Eyes, or as it's written in Japanese English, Safari Eyes, but I refer to it as Kiss of a Stranger, which is probably in the top five of all James Bond openings ever done. And it's certainly the best James Bond opening that wasn't in a James Bond movie. They literally hired one guy to do it, not the guy who did the movie, but just one guy to do the credits. And the opening credit sequence is, it's a James Bond acid trip. And it's real good. Jake is a great lover of James Bond movies, and he definitely considers it top five James Bond opening. I would say the only thing that has a few issues for me for Project Aiden as a movie, and again, I subtitled it, and if you've seen it five times, I've seen it 5 dozen.
Well, I mean, how many times would you have seen it just when you're doing the subtitling?
At least 20.
Yeah.
Because originally I had to do it manually, so I saw it like through 5 or 6 times manually typing in the subtitles until I had a subtitler program that had a timing file. I would say the one problem that the movie has is that they have the Bond girl is a wannabe thief named Carson B. Carson, and he is not nearly as cool or as talented as he thinks he is, and he and Kay sort of have a thing going the whole time, and some of the times he's funny, but sometimes it just doesn't quite work. It's not as well written as it could be. When Torrance Smith and Adam Warren debuted the Dirty Pair comic book in America, which is all original stories, Biohazard, their original story, is essentially a remake of Project Aiden. It has almost all the same beats. It's almost like watching Star Wars 7 after watching A New Hope. It's not the same show, but you can see every one of the beats reflected in the remake. And they had a better take on how Kay was dealing with the guy of the week in that one, which is barely concealed lust. Kay just doesn't do romance very well. It doesn't work. Kay is not a very romantic person.
That's one of the things that I did find interesting about Project Aiden is that they don't do anything for Yuri in terms of romance, but they do a Kay romance, which is kind of turning the formula on the head a little bit.
Yeah, well, Yuri doesn't do romances. Yuri just almost gets married. Yuri has almost been married twice in the handful of episodes that we've seen. Well, in less than 50 stories, 2 of them involve Yuri wanting to get married.
Yuri's a Disney princess.
Yeah, she's the good girl. Like I said, the problem with this show, the problem that Project Aiden has is that they're trying too much for romance and not enough for just plain lust between Kay and Carson. There's a nice touch at the end with a pair of handcuffs, which is where they probably should have been the whole damn time. Also, yes, Carson kind of shows up the pair incompetence, but it's like sometimes he's real competent and then he says something stupid, like he tells them exactly how little they know, but he tells them exactly how little they know. And so Yuri says, well, you're not a professional either. You just told us you know what we want to know, and we got lots of ways to make you talk.
And the thing was that
after they stripped him down to his pink and green polka dot boxer.
The thing with Dirty Pair overall is certainly that it's a great show, and it's something that's very entertaining, and it's very well done for its era, but it's also had a lot of influence going forward into the more modern era stuff. There's been a lot of stuff. We mentioned Cowboy Bebop with
Faye
Valentine. Every single time I get confused with the Yu-Gi-Oh character, which is my Valentine, even though they're not that different of a character, but
yeah, it's that My Funny Valentine episode keeps tripping you up.
Yeah, exactly. It's the my part in that episode name. So we have obviously our Faye Valentine in Cowboy Bebop, but there's also a couple other shows that are definitely showing Dirty Pair influence, and one of the earliest ones would be You're Under Arrest.
Mm-hmm. You're Under Arrest is essentially Kay and Yuri as traffic cops.
Yeah,
as done
pretty much.
I did Oh My Goddess. That's pretty much the premise. There is a reason that Lovely Angels is sitting there in T-Tropes for years and years, and nobody has dared to alter it, because they were the template that everybody drew from. But You're Under Arrest is probably the earliest obvious one. There are the other two other really solidly notable ones were right after Flash finished, the first of the Precure series was Putariwa Pretty Cure, We Are Pretty Cure, which has Cure White and Cure Black. And Cure White is the honor, and they're both, you know, 13 years old. Cure White is the honor student, has black hair, really long, is quiet and everything. And Cure Black is the star of the girls' lacrosse team, has red hair, a deep tan, gets love letters from the girls, for gosh sakes. Yeah, there's a reason that certain people, myself included, tend to refer to Futariwa Pretty Cure as Dirty Cure, because they're not even subtle about where they're taking it from.
Well, I mean, just look at the character designs. You have the old, yeah, you have modernized versions of, you have like mid-2000s versions of Kei and Yuri's hairstyles on a couple of like, what, 14-year-old girls?
13 or 14-year-old girls, standard magical girl ages. And you got one jock and one honor student. Yeah, you got the nice girl and the rough girl. It's a very, and then the other one that more modern readers, viewers would probably recognize is Panty and Stocking. Now, Panty is blonde, not a redhead, but otherwise,
they both have long hair.
Yeah, we sometimes refer to them as the really dirty pair but they have exactly the same dynamic. They were clearly, that's clearly what they were going for when they made them up.
Well, you have kind of a similar sort of dynamic even going back to You're Under Arrest, because you've got our main characters. I just watched this show.
Natsumi and Mii.
Thank you. And if I remember correctly, Natsumi is the short-haired, loudmouth, brash one. She rides the motorcycles.
Whose dad was a pro wrestler, yes.
Yeah, and then Miyuki is the quiet, more traditional, long-haired, you know, Japanese woman. Although she is also kind of crazy, she's just more quiet about it. Because she's the mechanic.
She's a mechanic.
And you've got the ongoing will they, won't they with the motorcycle cop and Natsumi. So Miyuki.
Miyuki. There's occasional things when disaster strikes and Natsumi gets seen too close to Ken and then trouble starts. But yeah,
it's mean like the episode from early on where the whole department basically puts them on a date together as a mission.
Yes.
We'll get to You're Under Arrest one day. We'll get to it one day, because
we'll cover it in passing it during Oh My Goddess. The other thing, though, that has to be brought up about Project Aiden is Project Aiden has probably the most musical anime ever done. It is from that era when movies were trying to fight it out with MTV, and there is music wall to wall. Several fight scenes are done over songs. It is loud. It is brash. It is pretty damn good J-pop, although there are two places where you know that the composer is stealing. One is some of his incidental music is very much the Alan Parsons Project, Where is the Walrus instrumental, which is a little hard to know because not a lot of people. You probably recognize it when you hear it, but you probably don't think of Where is the Walrus. The other one is right before the climactic battle, there's a breakdown, and it's pretty much the beginning breakdown to Aha's The Sun Only Shines on Tea. And it's the same boom. And then the big fight scene breaks out, which is interesting because, you know, it came out 6 months after Project Aiden.
What was that?
That was Living Daylights, the first Timothy Dalton Bond. You know who did the soundtrack for The Living Daylights?
I do not know.
Aha!
Ah!
Coincidence? Yes, it's a coincidence, but it's a damn interesting coincidence.
Oh my god. There's another thing about Project. Well, there's a couple characters that we haven't talked about. One of which, I actually, now I'm thinking about it, is almost as inspirational, I would feel, as Kei and Yuri themselves, and that's Mugi.
Mugi is also even less original than Kei and Yuri. Mugi is a displacer. In the books, is basically a displacer beast, which is actually a Cthulhu, which is actually a panther-like creature with tentacles from a series of sci-fi books from the 50s were gathered in Voyage of the Space Beast, which is also where Vance Dungeons and Dragons stole the displacer beast from.
Now
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but when I say that Mugi is something that you saw a lot of going forward, I'm not talking about that version of him. I'm talking about the big fluffy cuddle cat from the animation.
Yes. In the animation, except for the Crusher Joe appearance, Mewie is always done as an enormous puff ball of a fluffy cat who is fairly smart, possibly smarter than the angels, truth be told. But lazy as heck, and he's usually their mission control. Flies their ship, which is also called the Lovely, and occasionally shows up to deliver equipment to save their butts.
You know, actually thinking about that, there's a character that I know absolutely has Moogie inspiration. And that is from Excel Saga, and that's Menchie. Because of the same kind of, like, character reactions and stuff we get out of Moogie, we get out of Menchie. And then I'm thinking about it, and Excel Saga is another case of the Dirty Pair formula turned up to 11. Only this case, it was turned to 11, they broke off the knob, put a new knob up, and turned it up to 22, and then they broke that knob off.
Excel Saga was pretty damn insane. But again, the other characters that recur across most of Dirty Pair, most of them are not from the movie, are not from the books, they're from the TV show. From the TV show and a couple of the OVAs is Ghoulie, who's their boss, the guy who gets paid to have the ulcer of, you know, putting Kay and Yuri on the mission and, you know, telling them to get off his desk as they lounge on his desk watching briefing. And he's a fairly important recurring character. And the TV series has one that's very important because of the other thing that Dirty Pair is famous for as cultural penetration. Dirty Pair, the TV series, used to have a lot of shout-outs to a lot of American shows. The episode 26, which is the Dirty Pair attempt to invade a big gun base in a mountain to destroy a gun and recapture and rescue their boss. The mountain is called Eagles Dare, as in where Eagles Dare, Clint Eastwood.
Of course.
And it looks a lot like the Guns of Navarone. But the other thing about that particular episode is we see the cast of Star Trek on a couple of monitors, which is a pretty recurring thing, and several other references to various other shows. Like you said, they did a version of the Gauntlet. Well, certain American sci-fi people were noticing them, and these shout-outs were kind of answered back. The show that, believe it or not, that has the most Dirty Pair references, but they're mostly pretty quiet, with one big exception, is Star Trek The Next Generation.
I've read about
Rick Sternbach, who worked on the show, was an enormous Dirty Pair fan. So if you hear Kay or Yuri, which show up in the one war game scenario from the first season, that's from Sternbach. There's a couple other references here and there. Oh, what's O'Brien's wife's name?
It's Keiko.
Keiko. Where do you think that's from?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the most notable piece that came out of Dirty Pair is their other sidekick from the TV series, which is Nanmol, who is a little round robot with big metal sneakers on the bottom. That's kind of like their R2-D. They're portable, you know, computer to run things, to tap into databases and other things.
Swiss Army bot.
The Swiss Army bot. Yeah, that's basically what it is. Well, if you've ever seen the episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, The Quality of Life, you may notice that the little robots that they're using there look an awful lot like Nanmol. There's a reason. They basically took the design. They stripped off the white paint and made them all metallic, so it's a little less obvious. But there are multiple Nanmos in Quality of Life. And considering that Kay and Yuri once blew up Nanmo to stop a villain, that's not, you know, an unusual thing about his fate. But yeah, there is a lot of reference. There have also been a few comic books that have always referenced the Dirty Pair costumes or the character. If you have if it's not Harvey and Ivy, female villains show up at something that's like a costume contest or something in comic books, it's usually as Kay and Yuri. Their costumes do show up. They popped up in the Nightcrawler limited series in Marvel. They weren't terribly well done, but they were there. And there have been a number of other spots where very similar pieces have been referenced. But Next Generation is definitely the largest borrower of the Dirty Pair mystique.
Yeah, and one of the things I actually do want to cover, on this podcast is that we do have, you know, our sign-off. Remember, someone had to draw that. This is one of the shows that kind of inspired that saying. Specifically Project Hayden.
Oh, the over-the-top bit from the end of yeah. Project...
Multiple bits. Multiple bits.
Yes, but over-the-top is the one where they are over to the... With the music playing in the background, synced up to the music, they are launching rockets that pop up trailing pieces of paint that fly up about a foot and a half and then ignite and fly off into the door. And they animate this in slow motion with little bits and then trailing smoke and then this explosion. And they do it at about half to one-third speed.
Yeah.
And they have to draw two or three times as many frames as normally would. So, yeah, this is... And then there's the shattering glass when Kay breaks into Watsman's hideout. Yeah, there's an awful lot of, I don't believe somebody drew all that in Project Aiden.
It's not just detail, but it's also, like, the fluidity. Like, when Yuri gets in the tub of water, or, you know, flops into the tub of water, it's actually, like, pretty good water physics for being, you know, hand-drawn animation. It's actually just pretty good water, looking water, regardless.
The bath.
The bath. a couple of them listed, the people list involve Yuri. There's that one, and then there's her impromptu dance number on a transport.
Yes. There's the one song in the entire movie that's in English, which is nothing more than a transition between going from the American analog to the Russian analog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got Yuri rotoscoped in some parts of it. Yes, dancing on the control deck and Kay yelling at her. And it's nothing but a musical interlude, but it's a beautiful musical interlude.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, as an example of what this is saying from my translation, this is what I mean by Dirty Pair often fails to take advantage of the jokes that are there. After they've met with the Russian analogs or the Soviet analog miners, and they've explained exactly what happened to this wreck of a processing plant that they're sitting in front of that pretty well smashed to bits, Chairman, the boss, goes off in a rant and he's like, what is going, you know, da-da-da-da, yells out, grabs a pipe, snaps off, looks up and realizes that the whole damn thing is coming down on their heads. Kay and Yuri give a couple of Looney Tunes, and the whole thing just lands on top of all four of them. The chairman, his assistant, and the two lovely angels. And as they dig themselves out, because, you know, this is a cartoon, nobody gets hurt unless it's really a serious moment. They just get big. They crawl out of the rubble. Kay finds a shovel, and the chairman is yelling about his five-year plan is ruined, and what are we going to do? And Kay dumps the shovel onto his hand. And in the Japanese, she just says, do it yourself. And I was like, because there's two things. One is when his assistant tells the chairman that the plant is now completely inoperable. And then he's like, sir, the plant is completely, which is regrettably inoperable. And he tacks on at the end of this because he realizes he's being a little bit impolite. So in English, that translated as the base has been rendered completely inoperable, sir. But, which isn't really much of adding a joke, it's just an attempt to translate. But when Kay dumped the shovel on the chairman, I remember I was looked at that line, I was like, what are we going to do? Start digging. Yeah, here's a shovel, start digging. But they miss a lot of opportunities like that in this show, where also the other, one of the OVA episodes is one of your favorites, the Halloween episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where there's a robot that looks an awful lot like a Terminator. That was being transported in a little shuttle jet that crashed, and the girls have to find it before it goes off at midnight. And meanwhile, there's a whole bunch of thieves working the Halloween parade to break in at various places. Now, the thing is, this is about the second or third, this is the third time the Dirty Pair have done a Terminator riff. They do repeat.
We can do it a convention panel called I'll Be Back, and it's just talking about Terminator and Dirty Pair. Like, we'd have to limit ourselves. Because anime does Terminator plots frequently.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about that episode is because the structure of it is not really quite the Terminator episode. What it's closer to is another Terminator pastiche that was done in anime, which is called Booby Trap, or as animated, it was called Black Magic M66. The first, it was the breakout story for Masamune Shirow, the man who did Appleseed and Ghost in the Shell. He first did a Terminator story, where you had an infiltration unit that was trying to sneak into the city and had to be captured or neutralized before it caused too much damage. And that's exactly what the plot is in this one, except it's Halloween and there's costume gangs running. But the part that they missed the joke on is that Kyoku Tengu, the woman who played Kay, did not have a whole lot of anime roles in her history. Her list of roles is maybe six long. However, one of the handful of other anime that she did work on was the anime of Black Magic M66. She played another very butch redheaded character who was on the squad trying to track down the robots. So there's an opportunity, if they thought about it, to be very meta about it. Kay be like, you know, I somehow think I've been through this before. This is all very familiar to me.
I just want to point out, like, kind of the tone of Black Magic M66. If I remember correctly, that's the one where the main character goes to leave her apartment, forget she's not wearing clothes, right?
Yes, that's the one.
Yep. That's what I thought it
that's
was.
That's also interesting that it's the only anime ever directed by Matsumi.
Oh, that's not right. It is the only Shiro.
And they made the director.
Yeah, it is the only Shiro directed. It's weird.
It's odd. And it's an interesting little thing. We might put it on Tale of the Tape or a little short subject at some point. But this story is sort of a pastiche of that story. Because that story is like a variation of the Terminator. Well, this is a sillier variation of the Terminator, but adapting bits from this earlier adaption. So it's an adaption of an adaption.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's possibilities seen there for meta jokes. It's like when they have the other Terminator episode where they're dealing with counterfeiters and they're like, didn't we see this in a movie once? And they managed to not make the joke because they're getting thrown around in the basement where all the printing presses are. And like, didn't we see a movie like this one time? It's like, yeah, they crushed the robot in this giant press. Yeah, but they never point out and point behind them and say, not this type of press. It was a hydraulic press, not a printing press. Granted, I'm not entirely sure it's the same word in Japanese.
But that could be a
again,
case.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that if I subtitled it or dubbed it, that line's going in. Any no way it's not going in because there's just so many jokes missed in that series. There's a reason, like we said, that you when you watch the old Dirty Pair TV series, the plotting is okay. It's just that there's the dialogue doesn't really shine. It's the only thing that really shines is the chemistry between the two main characters. The other two OVAs, Nolandia is probably the closest to a true Takachiyo story. It's pretty damn serious by the end, quite grim. And 005 is mostly like a highlights bit, and then it gets grim right at the end. 005 actually is probably one of the better shows. I think it has a little bit of problems with the tone keeps changing. It gets really grim when it gets, so it's a little harder to really play up because you have bits where people are getting killed in ugly ways, and you have ways when you have Yuri doing a cat smile cheek stroke to Kay to get her to disarm the bomb in the bathtub. There's a little bit of tonal dissonance there. Whereas Project Aiden doesn't have quite the tonal dissonance because it's basically Doctor Strange as far as, you know, it's like, you know, there's a balance of terror. There's a robot. You pretty much know things aren't going to go right because it has a Bond cold opening right at the beginning and it doesn't go right there either.
Yeah.
But yeah, now the interesting thing about Dirty Pair is they were probably more popular before anime became popular. And they were very popular during the fan era, not so much during the professional era. And there's a couple reasons.
Well, that was what I wanted to get into, was asking you, because Dirty Pair is one of those cornerstone movies, in terms of when you look back at the timeline of anime fandom, especially here in the United States, is because Dirty Pair's had a lot of effect, but despite it once being so big, it's now, like, a lot of people don't know about Dirty Pair until we introduce them to him at this point. Like, even people that have been into anime for years, that have been almost as long as I have. Like, the only reason why I was able to learn about Dirty Pair is because you introduced me to it. But, so kind of explain a little bit that transition from the fan era to the professional era that happened with Dirty Pair.
When everything was getting bought up, Dirty Pair had, there's one unfortunate thing about Dirty Pair. is that it was a Sunrise property. And from what I've heard, what Sunrise wanted for the TV series, one, TV series weren't easily licensed anyway. But two, what Sunrise wanted for the Dirty Pair TV series, probably including From Lovely Angel with Love, which is essentially the two OVA episode 26 and 25, was just way, it was way out of the money that they could do when anime was a niche. So nobody had the rights to the TV series. Now, the OVAs, the big OVAs, the feature-length ones, they got released fairly early. But the other problem was that Streamline bought them. And that meant that they were mostly floating around in dubbed form. And they're not the worst dubs Streamline ever did, but they're certainly not that great of them. And that put them outside this, you know, that puts them in the category of shows people went in touch with a barge pole for a fair number of years. Now, as Streamline faded out, ADV jumped in and got all of Streamline's licenses and licensed the 10-volume OVAs and the, at that time, right after it was released, got the rights to Dirty Pair Flash. Probably all is in one big swoop. They still didn't release the TV series, probably because it was still too expensive and it would have been extremely niche. But ADV brought it out, but it was always, you know, by that time, the market had moved on a little bit. It was kind of like how eventually Project Echo kind of faded out because it wasn't in front of the audience for the longest time. But that didn't mean ADV didn't release it. They released it, all of the stuff they had. The other problem was that the 10-volume OVAs were done very cheap. Vocal soundtrack and the audio and the sound effects soundtrack were not separate on them, which meant that when they dubbed them, they had to redo all the sound, which was not a very fun thing.
Yeah, a lot of extra
didn't
effort
work
there.
Very well. And the other interesting thing is, as I said, Dirty Pair is a bit spotty as for what's good. Now, when in the fan days, everybody knew that the 10 volumes of the TV-sized OVAs, the 25-minute ones, came two episodes to a disc. And everybody knew 3, 1, 2, 4, 5, which is in order you could possibly swipe 2 and 4 in order which sets were good. 3 had the wedding episode and the casino episode with the Bruce Lee clone. That was easily the best. 1 had the Halloween episode, the prison break episode, and that was really good. And then 2 had the kids and the weather controlling god, which is based on one of the books. 4 had the wrestling episode with the funky steroids and the girl in cold sleep. 5 had the RoboCop knockoff and the Space Truckers episode. And Cowboy Bebop had a better Space Truckers episode than Dirty Pair ever, I have to admit.
Yeah, Cowboy Bebop's Space Trucker episode is really good. Then again, that whole
show. But when
show
ADV
really
brought out the things, they put them 5 episodes to a disc or tape, which in one level is really nice of them. But on the other hand, it splits the two best episodes. So there's one in each of them. Because I think Greenfield was being pretty cagey about it. And he wanted to make sure that nobody... Because otherwise, Volume 2 would not have sold nearly as well as...
Yeah.
But by putting the wedding episode on it, it at least put one really good episode on the second disc. The interesting thing is, after ADV folded up and after the market imploded, almost immediately, Nozaki Entertainment got the rights and brought out the Dirty Pair TV series. Once it wasn't being sold in stores, but was pretty much being sold entirely via mail order. And now it's actually a lot easier. In fact, the entire Dirty Pair series, or most of the stuff that's in print at the moment, is available from Right Stuff at about $10 off. So it's about half price all the way across the board. Now, I don't know if that'll be true by the time this gets edited, but it's been on sale for a couple of weeks. It's still not available on Blu-ray, however, and the Blu-ray Project Aiden is my biggest goal. I really want to see Project Aiden on Blu-ray, especially Kiss of a Stranger. I want to see that Bond opening.
So in order then, just to kind of, just because we do this with everything that we talk about, what would you say are your suggestions in terms of what should people go out and find and what are the best releases in order to find them? Because with Project Aiden, I did notice there's two different, we do have the two different releases. We have the ADV and the Streamline, each of which do have their own dub as well.
Right. I would, because Streamline never did a DVD, so that's not a big deal. So it's pretty much the ADV. It's either Nozaki or ADV. And they're the same version. But I would say Project Aiden is always a good, is this is one show where the movie is the place to start. It'll tell you, you don't need to know very much about the show to really get Project Aiden. There's not a lot of lore or anything to absorb, and it's just one of the better stories. So that would probably be the first one.
If you don't enjoy Project Aiden,
I would wait a little bit, but 005 would be fairly down the list. I would get Aiden first, and probably the 10-volume OVA series before I'd get the TV series. And I would consider Nolandia and 005 are when you want to see a more serious Dirty Pair, although 005 isn't terribly serious. Nolandia, as I said, it's pretty silly in a lot of places, but the character designs are very different, and it gets a little bit grim in places. The TV series you can get for cheap. I would say you want to have a good grasp on the characters are. This is one series you don't have to watch it in order at all. I have never come up with a classic order to watch it in, but there are just certain episodes. You kind of look around at the reviews of the episodes, and it'll tell you, this is the episode you want to watch. Like with the 10-volume OVA series, you want to start watching it in the middle, because the best two episodes are right in the middle. You can start at the beginning in that case, because 1 and 2 aren't bad, but 5 and 6 are the best. But 3 and 4 aren't too bad, so you could probably go in order with the 10-volume OVA. But with the TV series, it's really spotty, because the good episodes are so good, and the bad episodes are just not... They're not terrible, but they're not... They're notably...
My personal advice on this basically is find the Project Aiden movie. If you don't like Project Aiden, just stop there. Because if you don't like Project Aiden, you're not going to like the rest of it.
Yeah, you probably aren't going to like anything else. If you don't like Project Aiden, that's probably a good point to cut bait.
Cut your losses.
But a lot of people like Project Aiden on first view. Project Aiden is a really good introduction to how this works. It's
a fun movie. It's you know, not everything has to be super cerebral.
No, it's not quite turn your brain off, because there's a certain amount of satire and, you know, and a lot of pastiche going on. So there's a little bit of meta worked in there, but it doesn't require philosophy.
Yeah, it's not turn your brain off, but it's definitely grab a bucket of popcorn.
Yes, most definitely. Grab a bucket of popcorn. Quite safe to watch, believe it or not, guys. This is actually one of the safer ones to watch with your girlfriend. Believe it or not, Dirty Pair are actually fairly popular with the ladies as a show. I don't know how much fanfic gets written about that, but I'd have to check the fanfic sites. Amongst female viewers of Dirty Pair. I've met people that became anime fans because they saw it Project 8. So, and I was like, oh, I caused that.
So, right. Yeah, I'd say overall, we definitely recommend Project Aiden. And if you like Project Aiden, you know, go ahead and hunt down the other series.
Hunt down the rest of it. It's mostly in print. It's not really hard to find. It's never been out of print long enough to get stupidly expensive.
And it is a Sunrise show, so you are going to get quality regardless. One of the things that, especially early '90s Sunrise, is if it wasn't Gundam, it kind of didn't get noticed over here in the U.S. Another one of my favorites is Cyber Formula. Same kind of thing. Really good show, but it doesn't get the notice just simply because it's not Gundam.
I think there's pieces of Sunrise that like to do these other things, but I don't think they have a lot of pull in the boardroom, because I think Gundam is what's keeping the company afloat. I think Gundam is what lets them do things like Planetes and 2001 Nights. I do wish they would release another Dirty Pair thing. It's been long enough.
Even if just like a net special or something, like a 45 minute or something like
that. Yeah. What I'd really love to see them do is do an adaption of the book. There's actually two books written, one from each point of view. Do an adaption of the story when Kay and Yuri teamed up with Crusher Dan, that's Crusher Joe's dad, and Talos. Because that could be a lot of fun.
That'd be a great way to reintroduce both those series. And I mean, it's something that they already have the rights to it. So it's not like it's something where they'd have to like put a lot of investment into it.
They probably have to pay Takachiyo, though.
Well, but I mean, is it any different than how so many shows anymore now are all light novel adaptations? I mean,
yeah, I know. It's like these are originally Crusher Joe and Dirty Pair were originally light novels, but they were they're not isekai. Although
they're not isekai, and they don't have stupidly long titles.
No, that's not entirely true. The TV episode titles are stupid.
No, I'm talking about like for the series, though.
Okay, for the series,
like, you've seen the trend of light novel trials, right?
The episode titles are so long, they like describe what's going on in the whole damn episode. I've actually come up with like alternate titles for some of the TV episodes just to, you know, get something a little pithier. Because the original TV episodes are just, you know, it's like, excuse us, we're coming through violent breakthroughs. It's one translation of it. And that's the gauntlet one. And my version of that is, well, we're going to take gauntlet. We're going to take a different meaning of the same word. And we're just going to call it throwing down. Because, and there's, hire us. It's better to have pretty bodyguards, which is obviously.
Yeah.
I would call it a fistful of angie done with it.
So. Well, Drew, what is going to be on our plate for next episode? Have we decided that yet?
That's a good question. I don't know if we've made a decision yet. We could, I mean, like I said, this is a show I know way too much about and done way too much, and you haven't watched enough. I mean, we could try to grab Jake in and do Patley, but that might be a little complicated.
You know what, folks? We'll leave it as a surprise. So keep a lookout for our next episode after this one.
Memories. We are trying to release them every 2 weeks. We'll do Stink Bomb. It's appropriate.
Yeah, I think that actually would be a good one to do Memories. Until next time, I've been Rick.
And I've been Drew.
And just remember, someone had to draw that.